The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you?
I don't know how you guys get onto talking about dropping cell phones into graves and things like that, but I'm happy that we can talk about other more important things, Howard. This is really crazy stuff. Where do you find these people who drop their phones?
How it all started was there's been a video that's gone viral. Quite a well-known South African doctor, Mopanya had a state funeral. Was it on Tuesday?
And I saw that with the police turning the wrong way around. Yes.
So then I wrote an article yesterday about humorous things at funerals and why we actually find funerals so funny. We then managed to get onto this morning a funeral playlist. Which songs, are great to play at a funeral, not that we play. We need to up our games. And as you were saying, in the black community, it's about the music, it's about the food. The last funeral she went to had couscous, lamb, all sorts of things. She took photos. She couldn't Instagram that because she thought it was in bad taste. But you know, our funerals are very, very boring, really. And she said she was at this funeral in four ways, Zanati, where they had these huge open lawns. We're buried in economy class.
Pristine lawns.
Yeah, we're in a pine box right next to somebody you might hate, and you're going to spend eternity with them right next to you.
It would be interesting to I don't think we're going to do it, but the fact is that we're accustomed to doing Jewish funerals in a certain way, and then you come to Israel and you see how Jewish funerals are done here, and of course particularly the whole period of Shiva, the mourning period, where in some towns and cities the municipality is responsible for erecting a marquee outside the home of the deceased in order to accommodate the Shiva, because there's so many people who come over there. They literally put up a tent outside the home, and the municipality takes responsibility for doing that, and people are coming day and night, and it's quite common to advertise that Shiva visiting hours are certain times of the day, because people turn up at 6 o'clock in the morning and they won't go home until 11 o'clock at night, and all through the day people are just turning up a lot. So even within the Jewish community and within the different sects of Judaism, the practices are quite different.
Very, very interesting. Very interesting. I had absolutely no idea. Let's get on to some local news there. The IDF has been in action overnight following a firing of four missiles towards southern Israel yesterday afternoon. Tell us about it.
So we're not really quite sure what would have precipitated this attack. We do know that, following the events in Iran, there was an expectation that some of the renegade groups that had been supported by Soleimani, including Hamas, including Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and including Hezbollah from the north, some of those groups may well have chosen to try to take out some of the revenge against Israel. As it turns out, there was none of that happening, at least until yesterday, when all of a sudden, out of the blue, these four missiles were fired in the middle of the afternoon. And as we understand, this took place just as school children were kind of getting off their buses at the end of the school day. It was obviously a very, very sensitive time with people being out and about. According to the notification that I received, Iron Dome did intercept two of the missiles. There were no reports of any damage. There were no reports of any people injured. But nonetheless, of course, you don't want missiles being fired towards your towns and cities during the course of the middle of the afternoon. And of course, the IDF did respond as it always does, because the policy is that there will be no action without a reaction. And so they did launch strikes across Gaza yesterday afternoon and into the night against Hamas targets, in order to try and send a message that this will not be tolerated and it's not okay. Since then, it seems to be quiet. There have been no further reports of any incidents. But clearly, as always, the IDF will continue to be on high alert. And the IDF did report that they decided to deploy additional Iron Dome batteries in cities and communities across southern Israel in anticipation of a further rocket launches from the Gaza Strip. So there is an expectation that that is not the last word, at least at this particular moment. So there is still caution being exercised, but it's business as usual. Schools are open as usual, businesses as usual. There are no particular special, no special instructions for citizens in the area. And so this will be a normal working and school day Without any special instructions to do something different.
All right. But did this come out of as a surprise? Because
I think it was a bit of a surprise. I mean, we had expected that there would be an immediate response already last week or whenever it was, late at the end of last week after the assassination of Soleimani was made public. That never transpired. And they even went about closing the ski field in the Hermon on the Golan Heights because of the fear that people might be stranded on the ski fields on the slopes. Obviously, it's not that easy to get yourself to protective shelters if there are missiles being fired from Syria or from Lebanon towards that area. And so, therefore, the authorities decided to close that ski field. But there was certainly some element of caution and I don't know about nervousness, but certainly extra caution being exercised in the north. And then slowly but surely that level of caution has subsided. And then all of a sudden yesterday, these rockets in the middle of the afternoon, which is very uncommon. Usually we see rocket fire rockets being fired usually in the dark hours rather than in the daytime hours. And so this was quite unusual and I think a little unexpected, but nevertheless, of course, Iron Dome was deployed ready and waiting. So, you know, the IDF are always on alert and always ready for unexpected surprises like this.
Right. And registration of political parties and lists for the upcoming election closed yesterday. I started reading an Arut Sheva Israel National News headline earlier as just after 6, around about 6:15. Zanati and I always take a look at what happened in the world whilst you were sleeping. Zanati looks at local news. I look at international news, and we use Israel National News as one of our one of the publications we look at. And I tell you that I nearly fell asleep reading this headline. It's just become so unbearable that here it is. Bennett, Peretz, Smotrich agreed to joint run without Ben Gvir. Like, okay, I don't care. Like, can they just not get on with this? The amount of times Anati and I were saying we have spoken about this election, now the third one, and that it's all absolutely irrelevant because we still know we're there, is infuriating. If we're feeling that, what are Israelis feeling?
Well, we're feeling that there's still another 2 months of this left ahead of us before we get to the next round. But there were some little snippets in between all the boring stuff. You know, obviously the right-wing parties came under a lot of pressure yesterday from Prime Minister Netanyahu. He called this summit meeting in order to try and encourage those four parties on the right of the Likud to somehow get together because he's concerned that votes might go to waste if they run separately and if one or other of the parties don't reach the minimum election threshold of 2.5% of the vote, that those votes, those right-wing votes, which may help Prime Minister Netanyahu get back into office, may be wasted. And so he was encouraging them to get together. And ultimately, three out of the four right-wing parties did get together. It's interesting that Ayelet Shaked is kind of missing. She's invisible in all of this. She was the one who was really leading the right-wing effort in the previous round, and she's kind of invisible. And in fact, she's only been listed as third on the list of this joint effort behind Naftali Bennett and behind Rafi Peretz, which came as a little bit of a surprise, but of course the head of the Bezalel Smotrich. So I think there is a lot of maneuvering going on within the right wing. But the thing that I found quite amusing was the fact that a new party, not a new party, but a party had been registered and accepted by the wife of the jailed assassin of Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, Yigal Amir, sorry. He's the assassin, and his wife has decided that she's Larissa Trumbobla Amir, that's her official name, and she's decided to register a political party in order to try to get a retrial for her husband. And she says other people who she feels are imprisoned unjustly. And they've accepted this registration, which I found quite interesting, on the basis that she will not attempt to try to justify the murder that was carried out of the then Prime Minister. So on that, with that particular condition in place, they accepted the registration of her political party. And of course, nobody thinks that the party, which is called Mishpat Tzedek, which is the Hebrew term for having a fair trial, nobody thinks that they will be able to garner up 2.5% of the vote in order to get a seat in the Knesset. But it's still quite fascinating that she's decided to register this party and thinks she may have a chance of either making a point or getting a seat in the Knesset, which I don't think is realistic at all.
Interesting indeed. This is an amazing, amazing story. We've spoken about it before, but well worth talking about again because of what happened yesterday. Gas began flowing to Egypt yesterday from the Leviathan gas fields for the first time. Is it as significant as I feel it is?
I think it's very significant, and we've spoken about some of the significance before, but I think it continues to be significant. I think it's significant, by the way, that gas has begun flowing for the first time. I mean, that's the first point, and we have discussed how important this is for the Israeli economy, and I don't think we can underestimate its importance. But it's interesting for me that the first flow of gas from the Leviathan gas field goes to Egypt and not to Israeli companies, many of whom are lined up and waiting for the gas to come to them, okay? And many of them are not really properly connected, and it doesn't seem to be well organized. But to Egypt, no problem. Off it goes, and the gas flow actually started yesterday, and, of course, there was a party in Cairo to celebrate this, and a lot of good words being said about cooperation between Egypt and Israel. And I just think it's another small but important step in the development of the relations, not only with Egypt specifically, but just developing relations with the Arab world and Israel. And even though, you know, we've had this peace agreement in place with Egypt already for quite some time, it's never been a particularly warm peace on the face of it. And yet behind the scenes, there's a great deal of a cooperation that's going on between the two countries. Egypt has been massively important and active in trying to get ceasefires arranged with Hamas in Gaza to try to keep the peace in southern Israel. And if it wasn't for Egypt, I would quite safely say that things could really have escalated into a much more serious situation than has been the case up until now, even though we think that things with Gaza have not been good. And, of course, we've had our moments with Gaza. But if it wasn't for the Egyptian involvement, it could have been a lot worse. And I think that this cooperation and this symbiosis that we're seeing between Egypt and Israel is just more emphasized by the flow of gas now to Egypt. And, of course, warm words between the presidents of Egypt and Israel on the occasion of the flow of gas, energy ministers from Italy, Greece, Cyprus, Jordan, and the Palestinian Authority all getting together with the Egyptians and the Israelis in Cairo to celebrate this. I think this is a big moment.
Incredible. It really, really is. Is it anticipated that Israeli companies will start receiving gas sometime soon?
That is anticipated, although it seems to be much less organized. There are Israeli companies that have absolutely been waiting for gas. And I think there's going to be a big moment for Israeli companies as well, those who rely on natural gas and will be able to take advantage of this massive find. So, yes, absolutely. I mean, and of course, we've spoken about the fact that in the fullness of time, there is an expectation that gas will flow to Europe as well via this undersea pipeline that is still being drawn up and still being designed, but, and is still some way away from actually becoming reality. But that's also on the cards, and so this is going to be going to be an interesting thing to watch and a big moment for Israel and for Israeli economy in general.
Indeed, Antonin Rach, thank you as always. Wishing you a Shabbat Shalom, you and your family, and we'll catch you on Monday morning. Before we go to the 8 o'clock news.